listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
This week on The Dan Nichols Show, we feature a very special guest who I first came across when his father phoned me up on radio to shout at me because his son hadn't been picked for the Western Province men's team. And at that stage, I think his son was three. Well, his father clearly had things right because said son went on to become one of the greats of not just Western Province, but South African cricket, and is still a fixture on the global circuit as a coach and occasionally a player. He's also a good friend of mine. He is a fellow Laureus Sport for Good ambassador and one of the most elegant left-handers the game has ever seen. JP Dermody, welcome.
Daniel, lovely to be here.
I still remember I was Cape Talk on the sports team, and I think we've chatted about this before, and the phone goes, and this was almost before the time of mobile phones, and I was told to hurry through. There was a very irate man on the phone who wanted to speak to Dan Nichols.
Sure.
I went through, and the gentleman on the phone was very cross with me because in my sports bulletin, I had not pointed out the error of the Western Province selectors of not picking JP Dermody to bat in a top six that I think that week was Graham Smith, Gary Kirsten, Herschel Gibbs, H.D. Ackerman, Lloyd Ferreira, and Ashwell Prince.
Yeah.
And I think you had just turned 16. But your dad was adamant you needed to be in that team. And he wasn't too far off, though, because it didn't take too much longer for a cricket career that, for me, seems like it started yesterday, just begun. And now I have this ever so slightly greying, ever so slightly older, still young man across from me, looking back on that playing career.
Wow, what a story. You know, there's many of those type of stories when it comes to my dad. One that shines through for me right now, actually, is a fundraiser that we had for Plumstead High School. This was for our UK tour. I think it was 2001, if I wasn't mistaken, or sorry, 1999 it was. And somehow, and I'm not surprised by this now that I know who Herschel Gibbs is and obviously spent a little bit of time with him and playing with him. My dad met Herschel Gibbs in a nightclub, believe it or not.
Where else would you meet Herschel Gibbs?
And, you know, grew the courage to go and speak to him and then politely just asked, listen, would you be interested to join myself and my family at the fundraising event? And lo and behold, I don't know if he's that, what is he, Jack Daniels and Lime back then? And he said yes. And I was very fortunate that this event happened on my birthday, my 15th birthday. And we were at my dad's house preparing to leave for the event. And all of a sudden there's a knock on the door. And my dad says to me, go and answer the door. I open the door. Herschel Gibbs is standing in front of the door. I was gobsmacked. And, you know, I had the great privilege of driving in his VR6 back then with the subwoofer and tweeters in the door. And he was just a great human being and certainly one of my heroes growing up. And to have that experience as a 15-year-old was certainly something I'll never forget. But the reason why I'm bringing the story up about my dad, because I remember at the fundraiser, my dad, while all the cricketers were sort of hovering around Herschel and obviously asking questions, my dad shouts from the back and say, Herschel, just you watch. In a few years' time, he's going to be your teammate. And you know, back then as a teenager, you think to yourself,
stop embarrassing me, Dad.
How on earth can you embarrass me in front of my teammates like that? Lo and behold, 5 years later, ended up taking the field with Herschel in Sri Lanka for my debut against Sri Lanka, and never looked back since.
It was a remarkable ascent where from the rumors of this kid who's quite good to we're now talking about him being in the province team, being in the South African team. It seemed to happen almost overnight. What was that process like for you getting to understand that, you know, maybe I'm actually this good. Maybe this is something I can do. Maybe JP, the cricketer my father thinks I am, I might actually be.
I think that seed, that seed was planted at a very early age, particularly from my dad. But I think it came to fruition really in my mind when I was about 17 years old. And yeah, I was in matric and got a professional contract. So I was earning, what was it back then, 2,800 rand a month.
It's a fortune.
No.
What did you do with it all?
When you're spending 50 rand a week at the tuck shop. And, you know, I inherited all of a sudden a lot of friends at school because I was the man at the tuck shop. But it really, it took root then. because I started believing in this idea that, hey, actually, I can really do this. Because back then, you know, you play the game for fun, yes, but you realize that you have quite a bit of talent and you have good people around you supporting you and encouraging you. But it was an up and down journey as it goes in high performing sport. And, you know, that's where the seed really took root. And for me, then it was about trying to understand, okay, how does this work? You know, being a professional in matric, having to focus on school, and then fortunately after school, really gave my full attention to cricket. And then lo and behold, three years later, made my debut for South Africa. But I often reflect upon that journey, especially at age 20, playing for South Africa in 2004. And I explain it to people like I felt like I was in this bubble. It didn't feel real. And I certainly, you know, mentally, I don't think I was ready for it. But what I did take away from that was I got a glimpse of what it was like to play international cricket. And immediately after that Sri Lankan tour, I got dropped. And I left international cricket for 3 years. And immediately after I got dropped, I had this experience where I wanted to give up the game. And then fortunately, again, my dad and a few others really encouraged and motivated me. I remember my dad told me, put the equipment in the garage for a few months, take some time off, and then we come back again. But I look back at it as a great learning experience because I got a glimpse. Then I went away realizing that I was far behind, the ball in terms of really being mentally and physically ready for what international cricket was about. So I went away and had the opportunity then to prepare better for it and mentally just tune myself in, because it's one thing getting to international cricket, but how do you stay there? How do you maintain an international career? That was the important part. And then came back in 2007 or so, I think it was the end of 2007, and then the iconic tour of Australia in 2008 where things really took off. And ended up then with probably 13 years of international cricket nonstop.
I remember getting down to Cape Town to start university, 19, 20 years of age, seeing H.D. Ackerman in the flesh across Cavendish Square, sure, and being starstruck and unable to speak. Here is you, somebody even younger than that, now having to play alongside of the guys who, as the Herschel story opening the door, these are the guys who, they weren't real people, they were superstars. Mm. Now you've got to somehow line up against them. And I often think that when you are at that age, that's the biggest challenge. It's not, can I drive him through the covers for four? Can I take that bouncer? Can I manage to read him out the back of his hand? It's, can I deal with my world has changed so dramatically overnight and I'm supposed to be part of this and just get on with it?
Yeah, you're 100% correct. I mean, and this is why I say that, I mean, many people speak about this in their own experiences. You know, have the right people around you that doesn't only motivate you, encourage you, but also gives you reality checks from time to time. I mean, you think about 17 to 20, you know, that age group, getting thrown different things left, right, and center. You know, all of a sudden you become this hotshot in the cricketing world. And at times it can get to you. It can go to your head. All of a sudden the limelight is more important than runs and wickets in the game. And I think those people around you are so critical to maintain a level head when it comes to playing professional sport, for sure.
Hey, who were the guys for you, teammates and otherwise, who, if JP Duermany was blowing 60 rand instead of 50 rand at the tuck shop, who was walking head in the clouds through the streets of Perth and Sydney and Sri Lanka, who were the guys who were, in the nicest possible way, bringing you back down to earth and reminding you of where you needed to be?
Yeah, Ashwell Prince comes to mind, my dad again story. You know, when I made it into the provincial team, he then approached Ashwell to take me under his wing as a mentor. So we were playing for the same cricket club at the time, Victoria. And I fondly remember playing a club game where both myself and Ashwell played. And we were doing a warm-up drill. And he came to me quickly and he said, "Listen, you need to stand out here. You need to set the standard in terms of how you operate. Don't fall into this idea of just meandering along and, you know, just doing the bare minimum. Set the standard of how we want to do things." And soon after that, I realized that this is not just about having fun only. It's about understanding what does good work ethic look like, sacrifice, hard work. And he was very adamant in terms of driving that narrative. So I'm very grateful to guys like him and, you know, just close friends as well. I think of Jermaine Clouty, who was my project manager for my foundation. We've met as well. You know, he was very much a great support for me, you know, friends and family, my dad, my mom, my grandparents. I mean, as a junior cricketer, gosh, that Toyota 1.6 Corolla was always at the side of the field. Doesn't matter where it was in Cape Town, they were there to support. So extremely grateful to those people.
And you need that network because that's allows you to celebrate the good times, but also get through those tough ones, of which there are many. And I think your dad's been particularly good. In fact, he phoned me 8 times to get you onto the podcast, which is why you're here today. But ultimately, the one who's really got to get you through them is yourself. And you've got to have that belief that allows you to take that step up. What was the innings? What was the game where JP Duermany knew that JP Duermany was world class?
Yeah, we have to go to that 2008 Australian tour. And, you know, the process, which I've shared a few times in conversations with people, you know, getting an opportunity in the very first test, because Ashwell was actually the one that got injured the day before the first test started. He fractured his thumb. But I only really got the green light an hour before the start of play. And, you know, he was actually the one that texted me at 6:30 that morning, the morning of the first test, and said, look, it doesn't look good for him. So there's a strong likelihood that I'm going to play, and wishing me well. And all of a sudden, obviously, all the butterflies flew in. So I think that the 50 not out to win the test match, along with that partnership with AB chasing 414 at Perth, probably sort of turned the notch a little bit tighter for me to believe, hey, this is actually something that I'm pretty decent at. But it was the next test, down and out, and put up that, I think it's still a record, South African record, with Dale Steyn. I think it was the 9th wicket partnership. And in the end, scored 166. But it was the context of the tour, where South Africa had never gone to Australia and won a test series. I mean, I still fondly remember, you know, flying back to South Africa after that series. We won the test series. We lost the T20s, but we won the ODI series as well. It genuinely felt like when we came off the plane, there were literally about 3,000 people waiting for us. And it literally felt like we won a World Cup. That experience, I can never explain it to people. There was a stage that we all needed to one by one come up on stage as the announcer was mentioning my name, and the crowd erupted. Honestly, it felt like this is where I want to play my game. You know, from then it's been up and down for sure. There's been some real dark moments, but you cherish those pivotal moments in your career that really shone and put you on the stage, really. And that was certainly one of them.
How much do you have to cling on to that sort of memory when you've got 6 single-figure scores in a row and the back page of the newspaper is clamoring for you to be dropped and you're starting to wonder, have I lost it? Did I really ever have it? How much does that allow you to cling on to some self-belief and get through to slightly sunnier spaces?
It's a difficult one, genuinely. And I think, you know, if I think to the dark moments that I've experienced, I think when there was muddled waters around who I was as a person as opposed to just as a cricketer was probably where I lost my way a little bit. It's one thing understanding the performance. I mean, that's why we play the game, right? We want to make sure that we put in big performances for your team. But when the performance becomes your identity, and what I mean by that is if my mood and who I am is solely reliant on the performance, then I'm heading down the wrong track. And it took me a while to understand that. And I remember fond words from Shukri Conrad, who's now the national team coach. He was back then the Cobras coach. And all he said to me was, cricket is a part of my life. It's not my life. It is a big part of my life, but it can't be your life. And then he obviously explained it how I explained it now. And when the penny dropped around that, I then got an understanding of, right, there's a lot of hard work that comes with this. There's sacrifice, but it can never be who I am. I needed to understand who I am first for me to be able to go through the ups and downs a little bit more consistently. And towards the back end of my career, I think that landed a little bit better. And you allow that, you enjoy the experiences of performance and team performance and accolades. You don't want to deny them, but it must never define you. And I think that's where it really sort of stood out for me in terms of those experiences.
It's a terrific philosophy to have, and clearly a much needed one for you to appreciate, but it's not an easy one to execute, particularly in cricket, where, as we are currently speaking, I think the Malawian T20 League has just kicked off. I'm almost certain Scott Styris and David Visa are playing the Guatemalan T20 League. There's a league every 3 minutes somewhere around the world. The completely relentless schedule that cricket has is an all-consuming space. And the world sees you in one way. You might want them to go, well, yes, I'm a cricketer, but I also have a great collection of vintage Jane Austens, and I like to go for walks on the beach on a Sunday afternoon. They're not interested in that in Islamabad and in Bangalore and in Hobart. They want to know, has JP made 100? If not, then I'm not interested. And so that takes a lot of mental strength to go, you know what, cricket cannot just simply define me. Easier said than done.
It certainly is. And I think it's you mentioned the different countries that might not see the different parts of you. And that's fair, right? The important thing is to understand the responsibility that I have. And what is that? I represent 60 million people. You know, when I walk out with the green and gold, that's who I represent. And with that comes a lot of responsibility. So when I go out there and try and perform, I know that I have that on my shoulders. But what is on the scoreboard, unfortunately, you have to get to this place where it can't define me. The mentality for me was, every time I walk out into the middle, all I can offer is my best effort. Now, best effort doesn't guarantee anything. It only gives you the best opportunity to give a performance. And that's what I had to remind myself of every single time I walked out. And we have to understand that it is a fickle world, unfortunately, when it comes to sport. And it doesn't mean that you have to have the attitude, I don't care about everyone else. Of course we care. We care about people's opinions. We care what we can do for people. When I talk about this responsibility, it's understanding that a performance that you put in, or even a connection that you have with a fan, can change the immediate world. And I think that's something that landed with me towards the middle to back half of my career. So what I mean by that is, when you walking out of the change room at the Wanderers into the bus, which is literally a 5 meter walk, there are 100 people to your left waiting for a picture or an autograph. So what are you going to do? It's not always possible to sign everyone, but make time. But importantly, don't just make time, be genuine and sincere with that. Because somebody once reminded me that you have no idea what full commitment to that 5 to 10 seconds to that person might have in their life. We don't know what they're going through in their personal lives. And we have the capability as sports people to change the trajectory of their mood and how they operate in the day. And once that resonated with me, I view the game differently, because I saw this as a huge motivator to actually try and encourage people. And I think this is where, for instance, like the JP21 Foundation is birthed from. The huge responsibility and credibility that I've been given allows for me to influence somebody else in a positive way. And in our case, it's obviously aimed at the next generation, but it's not only about the next generation. You don't know what a conversation or a connection with a teacher could have for them to influence the kid in a different way. And that brings me so much fulfillment.
When I was probably 10, 11 years old, so my second year of primary school, I remember being at Harare Sports Club, right, and the young Zimbabweans had played against the young New Zealanders, and I was waiting with an autograph book, which most people listening will be far too old to remember. We didn't get selfies then, and I had my autograph book, and I wanted to get the signatures of both teams, and there was a player outside who, by his accent, I realized was from New Zealand, and asked for the autograph, and he signed it, and then I asked him if the rest of the guys were coming out soon. He looked at me and he said, "Oh, no, sorry, mate, we're all done for the day." And he must have seen my little voice, little face just drop. And he said, "Hang on, mate." And he took my autograph book and he went back into the change rooms.
Wow.
So he's going to get me somebody else's. And I waited for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes. He hadn't come back. And in my autograph book, I had Graham Hicks' signature. Oh. He was the hottest property cricketer at the time. And I realized that whoever this guy was had stolen my autograph book because he wanted Graham Hicks' autograph. And I was just about to go and find the police when back comes this guy and he gives me the book and he opens it up. And he's gone into the change rooms. He's got every single New Zealand autograph and he's gone into the Zimbabwe change room and got everyone there as well. Come back out. And that's why to this day, Mark Greatbatch is one of my all-time favorite cricketers. And I very much doubt he would begin to remember that, but he had that impact on me. And I always remember that when you say things like the impact you have as players, your 5-10 seconds can do so much more than you'll ever realize.
Yeah.
And I think that's just this immense power of sport.
And these are the stories that stick out for me because, like you've mentioned there, he would never remember, he probably won't remember that story, but
he's about 106 now, but yes.
But the beauty is that, you know, for the rest of your life, you will sit with that story and hopefully get to share that with many more people. And I mean, it just, the opportunity of that, I guess, brings me such fulfillment and such joy that you can have such a great impact on somebody else's life just because you play a sport that they love. And what a great gift that is.
You spoke a lot about your dad, and it is the fans who are part of that story, but the balance we get, I think, comes so much in our respective lives from families. And what we see of JP Duermany, especially on social media, it's mostly cricket or watches, or it's two of the cutest girls on the planet. And as you have become a dad, evolved into this space, it is something where I've seen you get not just a huge amount of joy, but also that invaluable perspective that parenthood gives you as you learn all these lessons that certainly weren't on the instruction box at the start. Yeah. And particularly when you have this life that you do, where you're still traveling the world, you're still in demand, there are a lot of uncertainties and there's not much that is kind of a guarantee. But you know that in those two children, you've got that constant. You've got that space that means more to you than anything in the world.
It's a love that I certainly can't explain. I'd probably go as far as saying that's your experience as well. And, you know, particularly my youngest, I always feel like she's got a hidden agenda. For instance, like last night, she will just come to me and look me in the eyes and say, "You're the best papa in the world." She's 7. And I'm thinking, what do you want from me?
What have you done?
What have you done? What do you want from me?
What stroke
do you want to go to? And, you know, the rawness of that just brings you ounces and ounces of amount of joy and love in your heart that you would just go to the ends of the earth for them. The gift of parenthood and fatherhood has been the greatest gift. Honestly, it has. And to see them grow and develop as young kids, as much as it is scary at times, because you think to yourself, "Where's time going?" And just the other day, you feel like they were born, and you remember those experiences, and all of a sudden they're 7 and 10, and you know, going to school and experiencing different things at school. And the next minute, I'll go on a tour for a month, and I come back. All of a sudden, the vocabulary is different. They're talking to you like they're adults. But what a joyous occasion. And, you know, I think this is my greatest gift. One of my greatest gifts in life is fatherhood and, you know, really aiming to be the best father that I can ever be. And even if it means that my youngest needs to remind me from time to time, I'll take it. But what a great joy.
It is, of course, couched in that terror that, you know, one day she comes home and says, "Daddy, I met this great guy at a nightclub. His dad, Herschel, used to play cricket with you."
What are the chances? Oh, what are the chances? That is certainly something that I'm a little bit scared of.
Well, what I can tell you to help you out here, my daughter Erin is now 11.
Right.
In 24 years' time, she will finish at the convent in Switzerland I'm sending her to next year, at which point she's allowed to meet her first boy, and we'll go from there. I've lost that battle a long time ago. Not that one, but no, she's a very strong-willed, and I think you get so proud of your kids, and they do give you that sense of balance, that sense of joy, because it's very easy when you are in a space that is quite public, that's quite high profile, to lose yourself in all of that and to kind of get swept up in the importance of you're off to another film set, or you're off to another MC gig, or you're off to the Caribbean and then you're off to America, because there's always somebody who wants you and will love to have you and to do something.
Yeah.
And having somebody drags you back to the important reality is just so important.
Yeah. I mean, they do it so often, particularly like if we're walking in a mall or something and somebody recognizes me and wants a photo, and then they both will look at each other and say, oh, not again. And yeah, they just bring you down to earth so beautifully. And yeah, they do it so, so often. And it's experiences that I will never forget, man. And yeah, hopefully you have more opportunities. You never know where life goes. But, you know, for me, it's truly about trying to be as present as I can for them. It's not always easy. I mean, we have busy work schedules and trying to be present as well. But they have a great way of just bringing you down to earth.
We both get to share time with the Laureus Sport for Good Foundation, and you continue to do some extraordinary work with the JP21 Foundation. And I know from my perspective, and I will argue with some conviction from your perspective as well, that both of those are quite selfish spaces. And it often seems from the outside, oh, you're being part of a charitable endeavor, part of philanthropy. It sounds like you're the person doing good. When I get involved with Laureus, it's because I want my kids to grow up in a better world, and for that world to be better, something needs to change, and Laureus can help that change. The JP21 Foundation can make that change. And I think what you are doing on a daily basis, what we both see Laureus do on a daily basis, is exactly that. It's using what influence we might have individually to join a greater collective, a greater community, and really hope fervently that tomorrow is a little better than today, and that the kid who's got nothing has something, and that we're sharing a bit of that great currency that is hope.
You know, I come back to the story about my dad again, and, you know, that's essentially where the JP21 Foundation was birthed, was a seed that he planted many, many years ago. And all he said to me was, whatever opportunity and credibility that you get in your career, you've got to pay it forward. And I didn't know how that was going to look in the early parts of my career, because naturally what happens is you focused on yourself and trying to make it in the game. And then we saw in 2015 an opportunity to revive the game of cricket in Mitchell's Plain, and that's essentially where JP21 Foundation comes from. But like you've mentioned there, you know, the currency is really about giving back. And I've just recently actually come from the community, because we handed out 5 cricket bags to some of the schools in the league. And to see the smiles on their faces, it's about. The opportunity to change the trajectory of their lives just through the power of sport, again, brings such joy to my life. And, you know, when people often ask the question, what gives you purpose? It's as simple as others, doing something for someone else. And my youngest daughter asked me the question, and which was, how do I make something of my life? And what do you want me to do? And that is my encouragement to her. It's really to not just focus on yourself, but to love others and those less fortunate than you. Because we've been given this great opportunity in this life to live luxuriously, you know, behind closed doors. You know, you have food on your table, you have a roof over your head. But we know that there are many people that are suffering out there. And how can we use our influence to influence them? And I'm hoping that seed can be planted early for them. I mean, you just naturally, what you do when you ask kids is, what do you want to become one day? And it's so fascinating how, I mean, it chops and changes quite often. But recently, my eldest daughter shared that she wants to become president. And we were driving in town, and I asked her why. She says, no, because I won't let anybody live on the street. I won't let anybody not have food on their table. And just shows the hearts that they have. They have the heart to serve communities. And I've no doubt that they're going to do some great work when they're older. in a magnificent way.
It's a step up from my son, who recently told me he wants to be a horse when he grows up. So well done. The Germanys are one up on the Nichols on that particular one. There is so much work still to be done with the JP21 Foundation, and I'll be watching it unfold with great excitement because the impact is considerable. But it does fit alongside being a dad and traveling the world and all of these 20-over competitions. The landscape of cricket is unrecognizable to the one that we played in as kids when you started your career and I first covered the game, and now you're jetting all over the world. Is it still fun? Does it still put a smile on your face? Do you still have the same love for the game that the current interpretation is affording you?
100%. And I think it's the influence that you have on the next generation, or just the individuals in the game itself, that gives me fulfillment. Particularly in coaching, what gives me fulfillment is the opportunity to have a part to play in furthering someone's career, the opportunity to influence them in a positive way. And not that you do it for the recognition necessarily, but on the odd occasion when it happens that a player would recognize the influence that you have, not in a public setting, but just coming to you, thank you, coach, this is what I learned today, or this is how you've helped me. It just makes it so much more sweeter. As I said, purpose for me is really about others. And I think coaching really gives me that opportunity to find purpose. You know, it's interesting, when I retired in 2019, it was quite an interesting transition from playing to whatever was next. I went straight into broadcasting, which was great. I still do it. And I think it's a lovely way to be a part of the game. But there was that transition was hard mentally, because I went from the understanding of representing 60 million people, and all of a sudden I wasn't sure where I fitted in the sort of landscape of cricket. And eventually when I got into coaching, I realized it's about parting wisdom, knowledge, and experience with the next gen. And, you know, hopefully there's more opportunities to come.
Well, you have plenty of that wisdom and learning experience to share. You've also got a tournament to be part of as one of the ones on the horizon. The SA20 has absolutely exploded. I know the Johnson team are looking forward to that. In fact, I think they've done their first double XS shirt, which is for Faf to wear during the tournament, that he'll be sewn into. But between SA20 and winning the Test World Championship and having T20 and World Cup events on the horizon, we say this nervously as South African cricket fans, sure, but it genuinely feels like we're in a truly exciting space where there's a lot more belief and a lot more self-belief in South African cricket than I feel there's been for some time.
I think the World Test Championship final has certainly created great confidence in the South African public in this current team, not only in Test cricket. I know we won the final there. But you get a sense that there's a great interest in what's happening in South African cricket again. And that's what the exciting part for me is. There's a style of play that they are busy creating that is exciting to watch, that people want to subscribe to, they want to be a part of. And, you know, for me, everything rises and falls on leadership. Shukri Conrad has come in and really stamped his authority in terms of how he wants the team to play. And, you know, the players have certainly grown in confidence. Momentum has been on our side, beating England and Australia away in ODI cricket, which certainly bodes well for what's to come in the future. Those are tough tours, particularly when you're playing in their backyard. And for us to do it so successfully has been a treat to watch. And, you know, you're going into a T20 World Cup in February next year in India, which is obviously going to be tough conditions. But I think we're giving ourselves a great chance to hopefully get over the line in white ball as well. But the World Test final would certainly edge a little bit closer in that belief system for us as a team. So looking forward to that.
Good times for South African cricket. Good times for JP Dermody, with a lot of exciting stuff happening. And I leave you just with a request to please pass on a message to your dad. Tell him I would have picked you for Provence and you were 12, and that I hope to join him and Herschel Gibbs at a nightclub of his choice to apologise in person. We'll reopen Galaxy just for the occasion.
Oh, lovely.
JP, thank you. Best of luck with the coming adventures. We'll see you behind the mic for the SA20 and a few tournaments before then. And if you don't really need me to champion you because you've got two wonderful girls who seem to be doing a pretty good job on it. But from a cricket perspective, thanks for many memories. And I suspect from a coaching perspective, there's still one or two more to come.
Thanks, then.
JP Dermony, to his dad again, I apologise. 11 he should have played. Joining us to relive some memories of cricket, one of the great thinkers of the game, one of the great coaches. I wouldn't be surprised if there's JP Dermony coaching a South African team at some point in the future. But for now, joining us, Johnson Workwear in Durbanville for our special edition this week of The Dan Nicholl Show.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholl Show.